I'm Jim Benson, and you're listening to TV Time Machine on Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and visit our show archives at tvtimemachine.com.
Nancy, you wrote down your response rather quickly, I thought. I hope it's correct. Let's take a look.
I hope so, too.
What is H&R Block? You're right. Your wager, 4,401, taking you up to 14,401. You have a $1 lead over Ken Jennings right now. And his final response was FedEx. His wager was 5,601. He winds up in second place with 8,799. And Nancy Zerg, congratulations. You are indeed a giant killer. Our new Jeopardy champion, 14,401. Ken, take a look at the audience. The audience is paying tribute to not only Nancy, but to you as well. All good things have to come to an end, don't they?
We're back again with Jeopardy! Champion Ken Jennings, author of the book Because I Said So, The Truth Behind the Myths, Tales, and Warnings Every Generation Passes Down to Its Kids, right here on the TV Time Machine. Your final game on Jeopardy! When the streak ended, what was that like?
The thing that I remember just feeling in that moment was actually relief. That was like the first sensation. The woman who beat me had just been, she'd been very chipper and upbeat all day, and I suddenly realized I was not going to have the edge I had with so many other players, where they would just show up and see that I was still there and just sort of mentally check out and think, oh, great, I'm done. You know, she was still just happy to play and was playing to win. And she knew the final question. I didn't. Again, that's what it came down to. And when Alex revealed that she had it right, I knew it was ballgame, and I just remember just feeling so happy, like, thank goodness. You know, I finally know how this weird, you know, summer of Jeopardy ends, and I can have a life again. You know, it wasn't until a few days later that I started to realize, wait, I can't go back and play Jeopardy every day like I have been, and that I really missed. It was like missing your friends from camp, but I was relieved to know how the story was going to end.
But it's so changed your life in so many ways. You're famous. You were famous then. You're famous now. And
I'm not that famous. I mean, given Jeopardy's demographic, most of the people who saw me on the show have now died. So it's not like I get recognized.
That's not true.
It's not like I get recognized every time I go out. It's a very small amount of fame.
Well, also financially, it pretty much set you up, I would imagine. It really, you know, that was life-changing for you.
It was a big check. I mean, it's not, you know, once you pay your taxes and stuff, you know,
that's
winning on
point.
Jeopardy is not, you know, I can't retire to an island or anything, but it did let me change jobs, which was great. I was an English major before I was a computer science major, and just never thought you could make a buck writing, even though that's what I love to do. And after Jeopardy, I've sort of managed to finagle that into becoming a full-time freelance writer. So I get to work from home now. I see more of my kids.
Right.
I enjoy what I do every day. I'm actually good at it, which was not true so much when I was a programmer. So, you know, thank you to Merv Griffin and Alex Trebek. I have this great second act now that I never expected.
Well, Ken, you have written a funny, unique, and very entertaining book entitled Because I Said So. Tell us what inspired you to write this book.
My kids inspired it. My kids are 10 and 6 now. And, of course, you know, kids that age will kill you with questions. They will ask more questions than Alex Trebek ever could, you know. Yeah. And I realized that often I was just parroting answers and warnings that I had heard from my own parents 20, 30 years ago without really having any idea if they were true or not. I remember my son running around the kitchen with a lollipop in his mouth, and I told him, you know, don't do that. You know, you could kill yourself.
Right.
He said, really? You really with a lollipop? Yeah, what happens if it jabs up into your, through the roof of your mouth into your brain? I just remember he seemed delighted by this idea, you know. He had never been more charmed by anything, really. You know, he wanted to know more. And I suddenly realized I had no idea if this was true. So I appealed to my mom, because we were at my parents'. I appealed to my mom. Mom, tell him the thing about the lollipops. And she says, oh, I don't know. That's just something grandma used to tell me. And I realized these things just get passed down for generations without anybody actually looking at the medical literature. And, you know, if parents have no instruction manual, I thought, well, I can write this manual. I can get to the bottom of some of these.
So how did you collect and compile all the myths, tales, and warnings that are included in your book?
I figured I needed about 100 for a book, so I started keeping a spreadsheet of things I remembered from my own childhood. And you start with the low-hanging fruit. You know, don't swim after you eat. Don't sit too close to the TV. Don't, if you crack your knuckles, you'll get arthritis. You know, all these, you know, ageless parental refrains. Chicken soup for a cold, all this kind of stuff. And I only was halfway to a book. So at that point, it was, you know, annoying friends, annoying total strangers, you know, asking them to recall their parents' folk wisdom. In the end, I outsourced a bunch of it to the internet and just asked thousands of strangers on Reddit.com to tell me their parents' weird superstitions. And that got me the last 30, and that got me a book's worth.
Now, are you concerned that this book could fall into the wrong hands, mainly children's hands?
We've actually seen it in my own house. My 10-year-old snuck a copy, like an advanced copy of the book, you know, the reviewer's copies they give out, and read it cover to cover before we knew he had it. And now we can't tell him anything. My wife went in there, and he's reading the book, and she said, "You got to turn on a light if you're going to read in bed." He doesn't even look up. He's like, "Nope, that's not true. Temporary eye strain only. Eye doctors agree. It's in Dad's book."
Uh-oh, what have you started?
I know. So I am not very popular with my wife at the moment. Maybe put it on a high shelf if you have kids.
Now, you don't just deal with bodily functions. You also branch out into other areas. For instance, the perhaps myth, start saving now and compound interest will make you rich. True or false, and why?
You know, false-ish. It's certainly true that compound interest does help savings accumulate and that saving money earlier is better than later for that reason. But after running some numbers, a friend suggested I do this because he had done the same thing. You know, these compound interest problems you did in elementary school probably had, you know, 5 or 10% interest rates, just depending on when you grew up. And if you run the same numbers now with our current interest rates, which don't seem to be going up anytime soon, you realize that, you know, it'll take not decades, but centuries to double your money at these rates. That really, you can save up for decades and earn an extra, you know, 10 or 20% now. It's really not life-changing kind of money. And I sort of got worried that we're giving our kids the idea that there's something magical about compound interest, that if you leave money alone, you get rich. Instead of, you know, if you actually get a good job, you can make money, or, you know, increase your earning potential, you'll get more money, or spend less than you make, you'll get more money. So I sort of thought, you know, the compound interest is real, but we're sort of overhyping it maybe to our kids.
Yeah, if you're saving in the late 70s when interest rates are 18%, you got a shot.
But even in those times, inflation was high enough that your real spending power was not going up as much as you probably would have thought anyway.
Now, you got to help me with this because my wife does this. Don't chew your ice. It's bad for your teeth. True or false?
I sort of believe this is one of those ones that started out because it's so annoying to hear that sound. You tell your kids it's dangerous. But I found many dentists saying, no, that's actually a real risk. You know, teeth are most vulnerable when they're cold and when you're biting on something hard. That's what makes teeth brittle. And if you're chewing on ice, that's sort of a worst-case scenario. So there is some risk of chipping a tooth that way. So parents are on firm ground if they're tired of that of that ice-chewing noise in the summer.
Now, there are some very key things in your book in terms of this is a public service and this is serious. I've always heard that feeding your dog chocolate is bad. Is that true or false?
That one is true. You know, so many of these toxicity ones are not true. Poinsettias are just fine, for example. If you swallow a watermelon seed, it will not grow in your stomach. So the thing about dogs and chocolate is actually very true, you know, and it doesn't have to be that big an amount. If you have a medium-sized dog, a few ounces of baking chocolate, which you might have in your cupboard, can actually make a dog very sick or even be fatal. So, you know, some of these warnings turned out to be true, and that was almost as gratifying for me when something surprisingly turned out to be right. Chicken soup, for example, is better at controlling cold symptoms than other hot liquids that they've tested. So sometimes grandma's oldest superstitions are right on the nose.
And this one really surprised me. I mean, I absolutely, if you had asked me true or false, I would have said absolutely true on this. Put on a hat, most of your body heat escapes through your head.
That one's funny. It comes from this old Army field manual where they had people trek around in the Arctic tundra wearing parkas and no hats.
Right.
And in that case, yes, they lost a substantial percentage of their body heat through their head. But in more normal circumstances, there's nothing magical about the head. You'll lose heat there at the same rate you would through any other part of your body, you know, exposed arms or whatever. If your head is cold, sure, you know, feel free to put on a hat. But it's not like there's anything magical about a hat compared to mittens or a scarf or overshoes.
Now, finally, there's a chemical in the pool that turns pee blue, so we'll all know. True or false?
I feel like that's one where the first generation of parents knew very well that it wasn't true, but they were just hoping against hope that their kids would pee in the pool way, you know?
Right.
But now so many kids have heard it that we actually think it's trite. I see it in movies. I saw a couple movies last year that used this as if it were a real thing, and you got the big blue clouds trailing out of somebody's trunks. No, it's not. It's not possible. The pH of urine varies very widely. So there's really no chemically it's very similar to things like sweat and other bodily fluids. So there really is no smoking gun that you could use to detect urine in a pool and make it a color. So pee all you want. I've heard Michael Phelps say he does the same thing.
Now, besides reading your book, Because I Said So, what is the best way for parents to discover the truth about their so-called sage advice?
You know, I found a lot of these were surprisingly easy to research. You know, coming up with a list of questions was hard, but finding, you know, answers on, you know, in the Google age, it's surprisingly easy. Kids raised on this stuff went to university and did lab experiments. There are four or five good case control studies on the 5-second rule nowadays. So I think it's okay, instead of feeling like you have to give your kids an answer or you'll look weak and they'll attack, you know, I think it's okay to be like, well, let's wait till we get home and Google it, or let's take out my phone and we'll look it up. I think that teaches kids a valuable skill as well.
Ken, what surprised you most when researching your book, Because I Said So?
There were things that every parent would swear by that cannot be proved in a laboratory. Sugar rush, for example. There seems to be no link. There's over a dozen studies, good studies, showing no link between sugary foods and beverages and hyperactivity in kids. And yet every parent will swear, oh, no, no, he doesn't usually act like this. You just gave him too much punch or whatever. And obviously it's more flattering to believe that about your kid. But it's mostly just confirmation bias. You know, the situations when kids are mostly worked up and running around like idiots is, you know, also times, holidays, and parties where they've had lots of sugary snacks. And in fact, that's not a link you can prove in a lab.
Ken, where can people find out more about you online, and where can they purchase your book, Because I Said So?
The book's for sale everywhere, pretty much your local bookstore and any online bookseller will have it. I'm online at ken-jennings.com. I'm also on Facebook, and I'm at Ken Jennings on Twitter.
Ken, what is the most significant thing you've learned about parenting that you can share with other parents?
The thing that, you know, I'm no expert, obviously. I have two kids and I'm trying to...
Hey, you're an expert. You're a parent. You're a parent. You're an expert.
I guess I have all the experience any other parent does. I have sort of found that, you know, maybe we're a little too overprotective of our kids. And I understand that, you know, even the worst helicopter parent means very well, and it's just trying to keep their little darling away from as many risks as they can. And it comes out of love. But one of the reasons why I wrote this book, Because I Said So, is because I started to realize maybe we're not doing our kids any favors by this. You know, if these infinitesimal risks are keeping them from real joys and pleasures of childhood, you know, if we don't let our kids trick or treat because we've heard urban legends about mad Halloween poisoners, well, actually, that's actually never happened. There's not a single case on the record of somebody poisoning his trick or treat candy to poison strangers. Or if we're not letting them taste the cookie dough or lick the beater from the bowl because we're afraid of salmonella. Well, that's one egg in 20,000. I mean, really? Do you want to rob kids of the joy of raw cookie dough for a 1 in 20,000 chance at a bellyache? I sort of think that in the long run, if we don't let them, you know, experience things and run around barefoot and be kids and climb trees and ride their bike to school or, you know, whatever the things are that makes our parental hearts stop, you know, we might just end up with a generation of sort of hesitant, unconfident kids who expect us to do everything for them for the rest of their lives. And I don't know if we're doing them any favors in the long run.
I think you're absolutely right, because risk is part of life, and that's how you grow, when you take risks. You took a risk, look what happened.
I majored in computer science thinking it was a safe, money-making, responsible kind of thing, and yet trying out for Jeopardy was the one sort of reach for the rainbow, follow your dream kind of thing I ever did in my life, and it's made me much happier.
Ken, it's been a tremendous pleasure having you aboard the TV Time Machine. Feel free to join us again in the future. or in the past.
Thank you, Jim.
This is Jim Benson. Join us again next time as our magical transport takes us on yet another journey exploring television's past, present, and future. You'll find your next adventure right here on the TV Time Machine.